We're exploring some of the great day trips you can enjoy from Paris in just a moment. But first, for a little French language fun, Paris-based tour guide Arnaud Savignon shares a traditional French tongue twister with us. I'm told it proves that English is not the only language with lots and lots of incessant S's to struggle through. He'll also translate the tongue twister into English for us, just so we know not to take what he's about to say too seriously.
Hello, so my name is Arnaud, and I am French, and I would love to teach you what we call in French a fourche langue, which basically means a forked tongue, so a tongue twister. You know, in France, we're always very long, so I hope I won't be too long, but this is a little story, and it comes really, really fun in French. Un vieux chasseur, sobre, plein de santé, mais atteint de cécité, chaussé de souliers souillés, sans cigare, fut dans la nécessité de chasser seul sur ses champs, six en Sicile, un sinistre chat sauvage. Il siffla ses chiens, châtains, satins, chauvins, et suivit son chemin. Sur son passage, six chats se chérubins siciliens, sans chaussures, sans soucis, chuchotèrent ceci. « Salut, sire chasseur, citoyen sage et plein d'âge, aux yeux chassieux, au sang chaud, sois chanceux. Sache en ce jour serein, sans chagrin, chasser, chose aisée, ce chat sauvage caché sous ses chiches souches de sauge sèche. » Voilà.
Voilà.
Oh, I got it. Goodness. So here is a story in English. I just translated the way I could. So an old, healthy, sober hunter, but blind, with dirty shoes, without a cigar, had to hunt alone a sinister wildcat in Sicily fields. He whistled his dogs, Châtain, Satin, and Chauvin, and followed a path. On his way, six virtuous Sicilian cupids, without shoes, without worries, whispered this. Hey, little old hunter, wise old citizen with great eyes, hot blood, be lucky. Know that in this serene day, without sorrow, hunting this wildcat hidden under dry sedge is an easy job.
That's good.
Sooner or later, most travelers see the wonders of Paris, and many of us make a habit to go back all our lives. In fact, I'll never tire of Paris. The problem? We overlook the sights nearby, in the shadow of Paris. Right now, we're joined by two French tour guides, Elisabeth Van Hest and Antoine Bonfils, and we're going to talk about the wonders of the area around Paris, sites within about an hour or so from the great city. Elisabeth and Antoine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Antoine, if you were hosting a visitor to come to Paris as a guide, and they wanted to see four or five attractions near Paris, outside of the city, without describing them, just to name them, what would they be?
Well, I would bring them to Giverny. Mm-hmm. Mainly. Closer to Paris, some place which is Parc de Saint-Cloud.
Parc de Saint-Cloud.
You can have an overview of Paris from the garden. It's magnificent and it's within 15 minutes out of Paris.
Nice.
And of course, Versailles, mainly because of the garden and I love outside gardens. And Vaux-le-Vicomte, perhaps.
Vaux-le-Vicomte is sort of the connoisseur's chateau outside of Versailles. Everybody goes to Versailles, and Vaux-le-Vicomte is another example of a great chateau.
Yes, that provoked the jealousy of the king, Louis XIV.
So Louis XIV saw how cool Vaux-le-Vicomte was, and he wanted his guys to build Versailles even better.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, Elizabeth, when we talk about France, we hear the term Île-de-France. What does that mean?
Well, exactly, it will mean Island of France. And that is very strange for a part of France in the middle of the country. But you could consider it as surrounded by little streams and rivers. Mm-hmm. But it is also in the way that it is the cradle of the French kingdom. It was in Île-de-France, a bit north of Paris, where in 987, if I'm right, Hugues Capet was elected king of France, and he will start the very important monarchy of the Capetian kings.
So this really is the heartland of France. And I think a lot of us forget when we look at France today, which is about the size of Texas or something, that it is, they're not all like waving their French flags all through history. They had to be coerced into becoming French people.
Oh, yes.
And even today, there's this feeling of the people in the Île-de-France and then the people out in the Provence.
Oh, yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah. When you speak about Parisians, we are a little bit different from all the other French people.
Elisabeth Van Hest and Antoine Bonfils are our Paris experts right now, and they're inspiring us to allow a few days to enjoy some fun on day trips outside the city next time you're visiting Paris. What kinds of adventures near Paris do you recommend? We're at 877-333-7425, and by email, it's radio@ricksteves.com. Evelyn's calling in right now with her Paris day trip recommendations from Nashville. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi. Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, do you have a, what is your favorite day trip from Paris?
My most favorite trip that we've ever taken from Paris has been out to Vaux.
You mean the Chateau Vaux-le-Vicomte?
Yes, yes. It is absolutely magnificent.
A lot of people don't even know about Vaux-le-Vicomte. What's so good about it?
Well, to me, it is everything that Versailles has to offer, just in a smaller, more intimate setting and with a lot fewer crowds.
It's amazing, the crowd differences. I was just there filming a few months ago, and we were fighting the crowds at Versailles, and then we went to Vaux, or Vaux-le-Vicomte, and it was like, where are all the people? And, you know, Versailles got a lot of history, and it's probably got more square footage, but Vaux-le-Vicomte is like, ah. I mean, Elizabeth, what's your take on Vaux-le-Vicomte?
Well, there wouldn't be Versailles without Vaux-le-Vicomte, because it was a kind of a revenge. Huh? The king discovered Vaux-le-Vicomte because his minister, Colbert, said, just check on that other minister of you, Nicolas Fouclair, who is building that magnificent house. He does it with your money. And so he organized a very big party in August 1661, and he saw that, in fact, his minister, Nicolas Fouquet, had a more beautiful house than he had. He was serving at the royal table on golden plates. Mm. And of course, Louis was very, very upset.
You don't want to show up the king, especially Louis.
Exactly.
You're in trouble. Now, Fouquet was, Nicolas Fouquet was a banker, wasn't he? He was sort of a financier.
Well, we would call him ministre des finances.
Oh, yeah.
And he was thinking that he was going to get the position of Mazarin, the prime minister.
But he was filthy rich.
Yes, but he was also clever to find a good system to get more money to fill the treasury of the state.
Okay.
And
so there's always fascinating parallels today to people who have their fingers on the banking in this
exactly.
day and age. And that they had it back then, and they didn't have places to stash their money as easily, so they would build these extravagant palaces. And Nicolas Fouquet, he assembled what was considered like the dream team. Three guys.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yes. He was very much involved in art, very interested. And he found the architect Louis Le Vaux.
Uh-huh.
And he found the painter Charles Lebrun.
Uh-huh.
And the garden architect André Le Nôtre.
So these were the greatest garden architect, the greatest painter, and the greatest architect together.
Voilà, famous trio.
And Evelyn in Nashville, you saw the result of that dream team, didn't you?
Oh, it is fabulous. It's just breathtaking. And twice a month on the Saturdays, they run the fountain for about 3 hours. So if you time your trip just right, you can actually see the fountains, and it's just spectacular.
And did you also see the candles at night, the candle show?
No.
Oh,
unfortunately, we weren't able to be there that Saturday night, but I've seen pictures, and it looks spectacular
as
well.
Very romantic.
Evelyn, thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you.
Bye now. Joanne's calling in from West Falls, New York. Joanne, thanks for your call.
Hi.
What's your favorite side trip from Paris?
I took my 17-year-old granddaughter in the summer of 2012, and we stayed for 2 weeks in an apartment and really got into living in Paris. And we, by ourselves, we did really well. We took the train to Versailles and spent the whole day there. We could have spent more time.
Now, you spent a day out at Versailles. How was that, dealing with the crowds and the overwhelming art and history all around you?
Sometimes it was a little annoying because you want to get a little closer, and there are some people, some tourists there don't. They're not very savvy in etiquette, put
right.
it that way.
That's a polite way
but,
to put it.
But you know what? You just go with the flow because that's you know ahead of time that you're going to have crowds.
In Versailles, going with the flow is a literal thing. I mean, once you step into that palace, it is a human river, and you hardly,
exactly.
if you can find a little eddy, that's a good thing.
Unless you go at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's good. In fact, we were there filming, and we were there at the very end of the day, and it's fun when they're just pushing the last people out of the Hall of Mirrors. You can have it to yourself a little bit. Antoine, what would you advise for people enjoying Versailles?
Yeah, because you're talking about the crowd and all these people massing there to visit the place, I would suggest that you try the market on Sunday morning, which is a beautiful market they have there. I used to go there every weekend on my bicycle, and then you can have... There's an itinerary that allows you to visit the city itself. So all
we're talking about Versailles?
Versailles, yeah.
So they have a good market on Sunday morning.
Beautiful one, with all the products from farms around the place.
A lot of people forget Versailles. There is a city at Versailles, which is quite charming.
Yeah, it's mainly rich people who live there. We call them the Versaillais. It's a bit snobbish people, I would say, but so very well-dressed, and the market is very elegant on Sunday morning. Plus, once again, the city itself has beautiful buildings, old buildings from the 17th, 18th century, and it's very well indicated all over the place.
And I believe that on Sunday in season, they run the fountains at the park around Versailles also. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And you can pay to get into the gardens and skip the palace.
Yeah, you could make a good combination, go to the market, then you run into the park. That's because the Trianon, the hamlet, which I recommend because it's the most romantic part of Versailles and reminding of Marie Antoinette. Well, that opens at 12 o'clock. So once you have seen that, you go back to the chateau and you could even pass through the gardens where about 3:30 the fountains are on. And just before closing time, you can walk through the palace.
So we should remind our listeners that Versailles is sort of the palace of palaces in Europe. The other palaces of other royal, you know, back then people really believed in divine monarchs. I mean, God said, this guy gets to rule me without question. And if you're going to be a divine monarch, you better have an impressive house. And Louis would build the biggest house. I think he spent half a year of the entire income of the biggest and wealthiest country in Europe, France, to build this palace. He rerouted rivers literally to power the fountains. And this is a chance for us travelers to go there and get a sense of the extravagance the royalty did that led to the French Revolution. And we can tour the palace. And then the other half that Elizabeth was mentioning is the amazing gardens. And in a way, the king would leave the Palace of the Louvre, which before it was a museum, was a palace, to get out into the hunting lodge in Versailles. Louis turned that into a lavish, grand, sprawling palace. And then they needed to escape even further. Talk a little bit about that phenomenon, Elizabeth.
Well, first of all, Louis XIV, of course, built Versailles because he did it also for a political reason. He wanted to be outside of Paris where there could be riots, and he had this experience in his minority when he was young. And second, he wanted to have all the nobles, people who could be involved in the government, he wanted to have them with him. So he needed a very big chateau.
So he controlled the Rockefellers and the Kennedys, and
yes,
he made them be gamblers and gamers and stuff,
exactly,
just so they could
He wanted to make order. He wanted to dominate everything. And now you can understand why Louis XIV appreciated the French gardens, à la française, where nature is dominated by man. And he loved his gardens. He even wrote a little booklet, How to Visit My Gardens.
Really? And yes. And by having incredible gardens, he was controlling nature, making it really clear that he was above mortals. He was divine.
Yes.
Louis XIV. Joanne, thanks for your call.
Okay, thanks.
Bye now. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about side trips from Paris. And our email address is radio@ricksteves.com. Ray in Burbank has emailed us, and she says, Chartres is a wonderful side trip from Paris, and she enjoyed the cathedral there. And Rebecca called in from Manhattan Beach in California and wanted to know about Euro Disney as a day trip. And, you know, Euro Disney is kind of like Disneyland in America, but you can drink wine. I guess that's the big difference.
And, yes.
Mickey Mouse, I suppose, speaks
French.
It
took a while, but they decided, yeah, you can take wine in the cafeterias, in the restaurants.
Disneyland is just a 45-minute train ride from downtown Paris. Is it popular with French kids?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
Deal.
Yes.
Very
yes.
Big deal.
And many families, they go there for a weekend. They spend a night there and then they have 2 days.
So it must be an American fantasy for a French family to go out to Euro Disney. And, you know, for years, we were traveling with our little kids. Paris was the end of the trip. And if the kids were good for the whole trip, we'd treat them with a trip to Euro Disney. I don't think I ever took our kids to California Disney, but they went to Euro Disney several times and it works just as well. Antoine, Ray mentioned going out to Chartres. What's your take on the Chartres Cathedral? Is that worth counting in on as a great side trip from Paris?
Well, once again, I'm going to talk about my youth because I used to do the pilgrim there from Paris. So it was in 2 days, 80 kilometers by walking. So it was not that pleasant memory for me. But I went back there recently and then I can enjoy the magnificent, of course, vitraux, the
stained glass windows.
The stained glass windows and the carving is some of the best from the Gothic age. And when you were coming in as a pilgrim, I have this romantic image of a pilgrim walking across the fields, seeing the spire in the distance. Did you see the spire, or is it too modern now and there's buildings in the way?
Yeah, no. You can still see it. But in my memories, it was more painful, and I didn't have much time for your very nice
romantic
picture
image
you just made. I was just waiting for it to stop. But in Chartres, you can make your own stained glasses. They offer you to make them on your own. They have a little workshop there. So I think it's a good way to introduce people to this artisanat.
Nice. You can have a hands-on experience making a stained glass window when you go to Chartres.
Voilà.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking about side trips from Paris. We've talked about the great cathedral in Chartres. We've talked about the wonderful sort of inspiration of Versailles in some ways, Vaux-le-Vicomte. Of course, Versailles is the palace of palaces. We didn't talk about Fontainebleau. Fontainebleau is an amazing palace where you've got many different kings leaving their footprint and even Napoleon. I think perhaps the best Napoleonic sightseeing you can have anywhere is at the palace he enjoyed, Fontainebleau.
Exactly, because Napoleon called Fontainebleau the house of the centuries. Since, you see, when you go to Versailles, you speak about Louis XIV's, maybe about his success, Louis XV's, Louis XVI's, but about the Bourbons. Fontainebleau covers the whole monarchy of France. And so it was not attributed to one particular king, and every king built another wing of the palace. It's a bit like a patchwork, and they transformed inside a decoration. So it's a wonderful place to visit and to enjoy different styles in just one building.
It really is. It's the sweep of French history from a monarchy point of view, culminating with Napoleon. Antoine Bonvis and Elizabeth Ann Hess, thanks so much for sharing some ways that we can take a great trip to Paris and make it even better by enjoying a few side trips.
Merci.
Thank you, and
merci,
au revoir.
Bien. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Des escaliers mécaniques, portillons automatiques, couloirs de correspondance, hors de pointe et d'affluence, fourmilières en mosaïque, labyrinthe fantastique, et toujours en courant, des gens qui vont et qui viennent, et encore en courant, les mêmes gens qui reviennent. Et le métro qui flânait sous Paris, doucement s'élance et puis s'envole, s'envole sur les toits de Paris. Des midinettes qui trottinent, des ouvriers qui cheminent, des dactylos qui se pressent, des militaires qui s'empressent, des employés qui piétinent, des amoureux qui butinent, et toujours en courant, des gens qui montent et qui viennent, et encore en courant, les mêmes gens qui reviennent.
Whether it's from the notes you keep in your travel journal, reliving your experiences through your photos, or just something you whip up on the spur of the moment while watching the passing scene from a Parisian café, the French capital certainly has inspired many a poet among travelers. Here are some haiku a few of our listeners have sent us about their own impressions of Paris.
Paris is the type of city that inspires the poet in many travelers. Here's some haiku about the city sent to us by our listeners from the 15 Seconds of Fame link in the radio section of ricksteves.com. Christopher Pacharka of Dana Point, California, noticed this about the city. Paris, a jewel box, a delight for the senses, a discreet lady. Barbara Belknap from Juneau, Alaska, sums up the simple pleasure of a moment in France. A Paris café, croissant, and café au lait, c'est magnifique, eh? And Zach Brown from Ackworth, Georgia, sends us this one he calls a haiku for the ages. In France, long ago, longing to return so soon, more years pass on by.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner. Keith Stickelmeyer read today's travel haiku, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You can listen again on demand, browse our archives, and find guest information in the details for each week's show. It's all in the radio section of ricksteves.com. We'll see you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.